You're tuned to Deadly Choices Radio with your host, Lizzie Orley.
You're listening to Deadly Choices Radio on 98.9 FM for the best country. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land and our elders past, present and arising. And I'd like to welcome you guys back for another episode of Deadly Choices Radio. This is our show dedicated toward mob making deadly choices. And I'm Lizzie Orley, your host, taking you through. Remember, making deadly choices is all about eating healthy, remaining active in body and mind, ensuring you keep up to date with your 715 health checks, resisting the temptation to take up smoking, or taking the right steps to quit smoking for you and your family. In the studio today, we have back with us rugby league legend and DC ambassador, Steve Renoff. Steve, got to feel like home now, by now.
Yeah, I know. Spend a bit of time in here, Lizzie.
Yeah, you do. Also joined by our first-time guest, Tracy Hill. Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. And Mikey Garogo. And it's actually, can you tell me a bit about your name? You know, were you named after anyone in particular or...?
I was named after my granddad. His name was Michael.
Yep.
So they just changed to a girl's name, Michael.
Right. That's deadly. I love it. So Michael and Gorogo.
Yeah.
Deadly. Nice to have you in the studio. And you're from the IUIH reception team, as well as Willy Tonga here, former Eels and Cowboys player and our latest Deadly Choices ambassador. Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. That's the Bulldogs.
You and the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
I heard you play for about 6 to 7 teams or something.
Three teams in the NRL.
Yeah.
And then I went over to the Super League, played for the Catalan Dragons, Lee Centurions, and Bradford Bulls.
Right, right.
So that's, what's that, 6 teams?
Yes, 3 and then 3. Yeah, correct. Yep. Yay. We can do maths today. This is fine. It's only hump day. Nag, Yemen. Could I get you guys to introduce yourselves with your mob and role? We'll kick it off with Steve first.
Yeah, look, Steve Renoff, Deadly Choices ambassador. Goongri on my mum's side, out of southwest Queensland at Mitchell, and Gubby Gubby on my dad's side.
Lovely. And Willie?
Yeah, Willie Tonga. My mum's from Peak Hill, which is down south, sort of west New South Wales, Wiradjuri mob, and my dad's Tongan.
Right, our mobs are neighbours. I'm Gamilaroi.
Oh, okay,
so
yeah.
You're
yeah,
right below us,
yes,
I believe.
Yeah.
It's deadly. And yourself, Mikey?
Yeah, mum's Jabba Jabba tribe from Broome, but we grew up, born and raised in Brisbane.
Deadly. And Tracy?
Yeah, mum's family, Cubby Cubby, same as Steve, and my father, same Cubby Cubby and Waka Waka.
Mad. That's deadly. It's great to have you all here today. I'm so excited to learn a bit about more about yourselves, especially Willie coming on board as a new ambassador, mm-hmm. I believe. Let's kick things off with you, Willie. Welcome to the Deadly Choices team, first and foremost.
Thank you.
Now, being your first time on the show, could you share with us a little bit about yourself and how you first got involved with rugby league?
Wow.
Big story.
Where do I start? So I was born in Canberra.
Yeah.
Like I said, my mum's from Peak Hill. We moved around quite a bit when we were younger, moved down to Swan Hill, down in Victoria, back to Peak Hill. And then my mum and dad decided to go to Bible College in Cootamundra. We spent 2 years there, lived in La Perouse on the third year, which was their prac year. And then we were asked to go to Cherbourg. And we settled there, and they done their ministry up there. I done my high school at Mergen, same as Steve. I guess the reason I got into rugby league, I first started boxing, and
right.
But all the boys, and I preferred basketball over rugby league. But you know, I moved to Cherbourg, and all the boys were playing rugby league.
Yep,
got into rugby league that way, and I'm sitting next to my childhood hero, or one of my childhood heroes, besides my dad. So. Yeah, it's a little, it's only my second weekend, but I mean, my second day, I was hanging out with, like I said, childhood hero. And, you know, I don't want to make him uncomfortable, but that's you know, really how it was. You know, playing in the backyard and, you know, trying to emulate him, but there's only one Steve Renoff. And I happened to be playing for Cherbourg in Kingaroy, just at a local game, and there happened to be a Parramatta scout in the stands. He rang Noel Cleal, who was like the recruitment officer for Parramatta.
Yeah, right.
Asked me to go down for a trial, and the rest is history.
Yeah, That's deadly. Well, it must feel, you know, you must feel like you have to pinch yourself sometimes with who you'll be working with DC. You know, like you said, with one of the people you look up to sitting right beside you here is Steve Renoff, you know. How does that make you feel, Steve?
Yeah, we're obviously, that makes me feel, obviously it makes me feel good and very proud of Willie. Obviously watching him come through as a young rugby league player, it's a great story. You know, we both went to Mergan High and grew up there, and for him to go and do, you know, he's been very modest there about, you'd have to talk to me about what he's done in the game, because, you know, he's played Queensland, played Origin, played for our country, and, you know, so watching him play, we were very proud of that, that he came from home, and, you know, a very, very good player. You know, there wasn't too many around at the time that were any better than Willie Tonga, so, you know, it's good, and it makes you feel proud that, you know, someone from home, you know, with a lot of good rugby league players, as Willie mentioned, from Mergan and Cherbourg. So there's been a lot go before us and a lot still going at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, Willie, it might be strange to think, but people do look up to you as well. I've heard, you know, around the station, I was mentioning that I was going to be talking with you today for the show, and already a couple of followers were just like, oh, yeah, he was a really good player, and da-da-da, can you ask him this, can you ask him that, and da-da-da. So, look, it's great to have such fantastic role models, you know, in DC here as ambassadors and to set, you know, a really good path way for our mob and next gen coming up. So, you know, on top of that, you played with the Catalan Dragons in Super League over in France. You mentioned that before, that you played for them, but that you moved over in France for that. What was that like?
The football side of it, not so good.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but outside of football, you know, the south of France is beautiful. We were 20 minutes, 30 minutes from the Spanish border, so would go down there. It was beautiful, you know, those little, like, beaches and, yeah, it's just the whole culture.
Perpignan, wasn't it?
Perpignan, you know?
Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah, it's
magnificent place.
It's such a beautiful place, and, you know, two hour drive to Barcelona, you jump on a plane for an hour and then you're in a different country, you know, like, it's something that I never thought that I'd get the chance to do, you know, but, you know, I wasn't as talented as a lot of the boys or all of the boys in Sherwood, but I knew that I had that work ethic, and a lot of people say that talent only gets you so far, and I was willing to work, or, you know, try and outwork, you know, the boys or whoever, you know, to get to where I did.
And that's all you can do is try and try, you know, your best and
absolutely,
and keep at
yeah.
it. I mean, and again, the rest is history, so that's deadly. And Steve, look, you also played overseas internationally, over in England for some time. What was that like for, you know, with league overseas? Because, you know, from France, you said, you said it wasn't, you know, so really great in terms of the sporting side of things for you. So, you know.
I say that because we weren't a successful club.
Right, yeah.
As opposed to Wigan, who, you know, Steve played for, St Helens. It's not as equal as the NRL.
Gotcha.
You know, you've got your four or five big teams, and then you've got your teams below that struggle
each year
to make the finals and stuff like that. And then they've got a weird system where the bottom two teams play the top two teams of the.
Oh, really?
It'd be like, so the two teams that are leading Q Cup would play whoever the two bottom teams of the NRL are.
Interesting.
And they have a competition by themselves, and they play it out to stay up in the Super League. So it's weird in that sense,
thing
but
for the
there's definitely a good incentive.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Steve, you know, with your experience, you know, you were over in England for some time. So what's the league like, you know, overseas?
Yeah, look, as Willie just mentioned, we're sort of the opposite end of that. So I went to a big club called Wigan. You know, they've been very dominant over the years, and so, you know, Wigan was at the other end. That they used to win a lot of competitions. Mind you, I was over. They had 2 years over there, and we made two grand finals, and we lost both of them. So I didn't get the win over there. But very good club. We had a good experience. I took my family over, and I went over there with four children, and came back with five. I found my fifth child over there. He was born there.
Freddie.
Yeah. So he was born there, and so it was good. We had a really good experience over there, and the 2 years I had there, I really enjoyed it. Mm. I would have stayed a bit longer too, because I was retired at 31, but then that was a year, 2001, September 11th happened. So It was sort of like, and I got a young family and I just wanted to get home. So that's when I pulled the pin.
Yeah, fully, yeah, understandable. So, you know, going back to Willie, so now you've joined up with Deadly Choices.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about?
Okay, so I know a few of the boys that work at Deadly Choices. My ultimate goal was to come back to Brisbane and be close to the family. My mother and father live in Logan and they've lived there for 19 years, I think it is.
Yeah,
so they moved from Cherbourg to Logan. And so I've been away for, you know, for those 19 years. And it feels like I've sort of lost a bit of connection there. So I felt, you know, as they're getting older, I wanted to reconnect and spoke to one of the boys, Francis, who's, you know, Steve's nephew. We're really good boys. And they had a chat. Well, he had a chat to Steve. Steve, you know, worked his magic, I guess, and Ian and Adrian came down to Sydney and asked if I'd be willing to jump on board as an ambassador.
Yeah, right.
At the time, I was working with CARI down in Sydney, which is an Aboriginal foster care agency. And yeah, I'm back up here and I'm loving it.
I was thinking about, you know, if you have any advice for Mob, who, you know, you were saying you were disconnected for a little bit though, you felt that way. You know, any advice for people who might take a leaf out of your book in reconnecting, you know, with Mob and their community?
I think, yeah, one of the biggest regrets I've got is distancing. Like I felt each year I was away, I felt that I was sort of distancing myself even more from my family.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd come back home and visit them, you know, on the odd occasion, a weekend here, you know, maybe if we played the Bronx, then I'd come out and catch up with them, but it wasn't enough. And with us, you know, family's everything.
Yes, that's
and,
right. Yeah.
Realizing after I'd retired that I'd lost that connection really hit home, and I thought, you know, I need to get back. And so, I guess my advice is that, yeah, just stay connected with your family, your mob, your people, as much as you can, because you just never know, you know, like, how long they're going to be around for. You know, it's been a massive eye-opener in the last 2 weeks, which the stats that I've seen, you know, with health and stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's I'm learning a lot. I've learned a lot over the last week and a half.
Mm.
But, yeah, keen to do my bit if I can, you know, to try and help the community and our people.
Well, good on you, brother. It's absolutely wonderful to have you on the team. You know, and you were mentioning, you know, you looked at the stats and it's quite shocking to you. And you know, over the past even the couple of weeks you've been involved. But what else have you, you know, how are you finding being part of the DC team? I mean, knowing that your role involved with everybody working together is going to do some good in the community. You know, how have you been finding it so far? How are you feeling about it?
I love it. Yeah. I really do. You know, I get to come in and, you know, mix with the boys that I've known for a long time. You know, Brenton, who also is an ambassador.
Yeah, yeah.
I've known him since I was 17. You know, played alongside him or against him, you know, schoolboy footy, and then coming in and seeing Steve, you know, and still feeling like a little fanboy. and then
bless.
I haven't seen Petro yet, but, you know, Petro's on board as well. And, you know, I've played alongside Petro in Origin and Australia. It's, for me right now, it's a dream job.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And now you get to chill out in a studio for radio. So
yeah,
add that on.
I'm doing it all.
Hey, but also you've been doing some clinic visits and things like that, I've heard. So how has that been? And what kind of things have you been doing in terms of, the health side of things? Yeah.
Yeah, so we've gone and checked out 3 or 4 clinics. We went up to Moray Field, I think it is. Yeah. And they had like the Elders games. And that was really funny to see how competitive they are.
Oh, man, yeah.
But, and
I think, was that the one that Uncle Marshall Saunders was at? Was he at that? I think he was marking the, doing the score.
Yeah. But they, it's really funny to see, like, they're so competitive and they're just funny. Like, they had me in stitches. But it was good to also meet a couple of ladies that were from Cherbourg, from the Stolen Generations, that were put into the dorms. Yeah, hearing their stories, yeah, it was really heartfelt as well.
Yeah, with the work that your parents have done in community,
mm-hmm.
was that something that, you know, is very close to your heart with the kind of work that they've been doing as well?
I'm not sure if it was them, but
yeah.
When I first went down to Parramatta, Dean Witters was there as well, and he took myself and Tamana out to communities and
right.
and out to juvenile justice centres and stuff like that, and it was something that I was always drawn back to. You know, people said, you know, you should study other things, become a PT or whatever.
Mm.
But I've always been drawn back to wanting to help the community mm. and my people, both Indigenous and Pacific Island. So, mm. yeah, if I can play my part in any way and help somebody, then, yeah, I feel like I'm doing my job.
Yeah, that's deadly. And with the more, you know, awesome ambassadors that we'll get on with DC, you know, I'm seeing more and more coming on board. I feel like it's a bit of a Captain Planet vibe, like with our powers combined. So that's deadly. So we keep, you know, keep powering up, levelling up there. Nah. That's my geeky side coming.
Yeah.
Sorry about it. Nah. So you've also been involved with some school you're also going to be involved with some upcoming school programs and the Touch Carnival, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's coming, yeah.
Yeah. You know, look, I'm still trying to find my feet.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, with everything. And like I said, just going out to the clinics and seeing the stats, coming out of like the NRL, because NRL's like it's a bubble. And you sort of every day it's you live, eat, breathe routine, rugby yeah. league, and so being out of that for a year and a half now, I'm seeing so much more now within the community, which I regret not seeing there. But
in the sense, you've got that mental capacity to do that though, because you know when you're in that world, it's kind of it can be restricting when you've got that one thing you've got to focus on. So
yeah,
you've got
for
the
sure.
capacity to.
Willie's really yeah. his story is. Is a bit unique in that he's been there since he was 17.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
34, you finished?
35, yes.
Yeah, 35.
35, yeah.
So he's been in that, as he talked about, that bubble for that long.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised because the first week, you know, I took him around to a few clinics and it was really amazing because I forgot about it. He doesn't know Brisbane.
Mm.
So he didn't spend any time here, did
no.
he? And he said, I know him. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, he's been in Sydney.
Yeah, yep.
So he grew up in Sydney, mm-hmm. virtually.
Yeah.
And so everything's a bit of an eye-opener
mm.
for him. And I think, you know, there's so much to take on board.
That's right. Yeah. And look, you're doing really well, you know. And
Thank you.
I wouldn't say don't market it as something you regret, you know. Cause
yeah, I shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
It's something that would have been good to pick up on. And,
yeah.
You know, because thinking – the act I feel I could have had mm. while I was playing
mm.
as opposed to now. I know within my heart that I still can make that impact within the community, but our mob love rugby league. And
yeah.
if you're playing rugby league, if you're in the NRL, then that's a different story.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. I can't change that now, but yeah, I'm looking forward to the next journey. And
look, we're all on our own journeys. And
for sure.
I mean, with me, you know, I'm still reconnecting with my family. I mm-hmm. still have to spend time on country and with my community myself. I haven't yet. So as you've probably found, Mobba, they're going to be there with open arms.
Very
definitely. Welcoming.
Yeah.
And, you know, included with that, it's a part of your social and emotional health and well-being, you know, coming back to country or reconnecting with mob. And on top of that, how do you actually keep on top of your health? You know, how do you keep mentally and physically fit? So the connection to country obviously is one of them, but mm-hmm. What else do you do?
I guess on the physical side, I train every day, you know, whether it be boxing or running, just I do something every day. The mental side of it, it's still a struggle, to be honest, you know, being outside of I'd still say recently retired because, you know, the biggest thing for me is that camaraderie,
yes.
you know, being around the boys every day. Me personally, I'm not sure about Steve, but that's the biggest thing that I missed.
Mm.
I don't miss the game. I don't miss the contact or anything like that. I enjoyed the training, but just being around the boys every day, you know, you're like brothers, you know, and that's hard to find, but I guess, you know, coming in with Deadly Choices, you've got these ex-rugby league players and really good people. And like you said before, everybody's welcomed me with open arms, and it feels like, you know, I'm back in with a team now, which is awesome.
That's wonderful. And don't forget, you've connected with us here at 98.9 FM too, that are here to support Mob as well. So you've got family here that you can always connect with.
I appreciate
too,
it.
You know, working
you.
Family here. That's no worries, brother. And thank you for being so honest about your journey and your transition into this new pathway. So, you know, really appreciate that as well. Is there anyone yourself? I mean, you've mentioned a couple of role models, Steve Renoff and Petro Sivanisiva, someone that you've played alongside. Is there anyone else that you know, any community leaders that you look up to or that you did, you know, growing up?
Yeah, well, the Sherbert boys, it's funny, Ricky Bird, who works at Deadly Choices as well.
Yep. He was on last week's show, actually.
Wait, yeah.
Was he? Yeah, was it last week? Yeah, last week's
like,
show. Yeah.
Yeah, he was one of my favourite players as well. Personally, he'd be in my top five, you know, just seemed like, just of natural ability. You know, it was a shame that he wasn't able to kick on, but, yeah, just having somebody around that I could look up to, who wasn't too much older. But then, yeah, there was, you know, elders like Warren Collins, you know, back in Cherbourg, and I met his brother the other day.
David, yeah.
David, yeah. What clinic was that?
Yuli Birwa, he's CEO.
Yeah.
Oh, is he? Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
I met him.
Yeah.
We had lunch with him.
Good man. Met him the other day. Yeah, Arnie Murray, who coached me, who's, I think he's the mayor of Cherbourg now.
Whoa.
So it's, I'm just sort of, like I said, starting to reconnect. It has been 19 years, but, you know, that's all behind me now, and I'm just looking forward to the next chapter, I guess.
It's great that you get to do this with these deadly role models we have.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, Steve, you've been a Deadly Choices ambassador for how many years? 10 years?
Yeah, since we started. So, yeah, just over 10 years.
Over 10 years.
We started this 2010. We started our journey with the Institute forming. And then obviously Deadly Choices, when we brought the four clinics together to form the Institute, our first program that we developed was Deadly Choices. And we'd had no idea 10 years ago it ended up where it is today. So
yeah.
It's just been amazing.
You see those shirts everywhere.
Yeah.
So how have you found your journey with Deadly Choices? I mean, I know you said it's kind of blown you away, but, you know,
I think
the intricacies.
Yeah, well, it's just something that, as I said, developed, and Ian Lacey and Kieran Lander were right behind that when we first started, and Adrian Carson, and, you know, to have him as a leader. Like, Adrian's younger than me, but he's someone you look up to when it comes to this work, you know, the Indigenous health, especially urban Indigenous health. You know, that came out of him and a couple other people's thoughts. And what they've done in 10 years has just been amazing. And, you know, it's sort of talked about across the board now in health. So I do a bit of work for Digital Health Australia, and I was there with them yesterday on a link up between all the states, and at a... There was a talk, and, you know, the Institute and Deadly Choices were mentioned as one of the shining lights across the country with the work you do. So it makes you feel proud when you hear that sort of stuff. And I think, you know, being one of the original ambassadors is something we got to build. And now we get to bring on guys like Willie and, you know, and Petro in the last year or so. So what the place does do, it attracts good people. I think that's a big thing.
Yes.
You know, you could done anything in any given sport and been successful, but, you know, you won't be sitting in a Deadly Choices shirt or with the Institute if you're not a good person.
Mm.
And I think that's been the really good part around what we do. Mm. We have good people, and Willie gets to see that with our team. I'm just going to the head office. It's a good place to be.
Yeah.
All these guys here, you know. You'd all agree with that. It's positive. You go in there, and if you're not feeling great, you walk out of there feeling even better. So,
yeah.
You know, so it we're very proud of it.
And you guys create positive change too. You know, you said the Deadly Choices attracts, and IUH attracts good people. You know, it's you also attract people wanting to do more good as well. You know, and wanting to make that positive change.
And you get to see that, and you get to hear the stats. Like during NAIDOC week, I think it was Nacho's, the national body brought out their stats around closing the gap, and now Queensland are leading that. The last closing the gap stats show that Queensland leading it, directly attributed to the Institute. And Deadly Choices.
That's amazing.
So that's amazing. Yeah,
they say we're closing it 1.75 times faster than the national closing gap.
So, you know, that makes us feel proud, you know. I get goosebumps when I hear that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Just what's happening here, and it's through Deadly Choices. And that comes down to Deadly Choices is a simple program.
Right, yeah.
It's about our people.
A simple message.
It's a simple message, but our people going to get a 715 health check. But what that entails, a lot of people outside of the health spec don't realise, is, you know, that's ongoing care, that's prevention, and that's why we get the news like that.
And it's a lot of work, because there has been that discrepancy between healthcare and our mob for years. So to create a safe environment, you know, earlier we spoke about stolen gen, et cetera, and that's had a big impact, you know, on this massive gap. So getting that, you know, that connection with looking after your health and accessing clinics in a safe environment, you know, in proper way, you know. So it's a lot of work, and you guys have gone leaps and bounds in this, because it's something that we can trust. We have a trust in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I think that's what we had to, you know, virtually put across the community and even sell to the community when we first started this. Like, this is a place where you can come, because a lot of our mob back in the day, prior to the Institute and Deadly Choices here in the southeast corner, they didn't access health regularly. So we had to build a safe place for that. In a place they trusted.
Yes.
And that's what we've done. And Willie talked about, you know, going to the elders' games. And I use that for my own mental health, our work, because I'll either go to a work it out program, I come out of that feeling really good. I go to the elders' game, I come out of that feeling great. So it's uplifting for me. Yeah, I use, that's my free mental health work there done for me, and it's my work. And, you know, Willie will find that. You know, he'll do the same. And when you go to these programs that we had, you just walk away feeling good.
Yeah, it was like, sorry.
No,
I went to a work at our program in Logan yesterday, and one of the uncles, he had diabetes and he was on insulin, but because of that program, he's been cleared of it all, and now he doesn't have to take any medication or anything. So the doctor that he was seeing, he said that he's only seen that in 2 patients in his whole career. So that, like, me hearing that story, like, it was so uplifting, and, you know, me wanting to get amongst it more and do whatever I can to help everybody else.
Yeah. It must feel good knowing, like, I sound like a hippie, but the feel-good vibes that everybody gets, it's like a reciprocated thing.
Well, it is.
Would you say that's a rewarding part for both of you guys as ambassadors?
Without a doubt. And like I said, Willie's at the start of that journey. You know, he's week and a half in. You know, I've been doing it now for 10 years, but that doesn't change for me. So even 10 years into this program, you know, you still walk away feeling great and very proud of the work that everyone does. And, you know, Willie's got a whole lot of that to look forward to.
What do you think is the importance of role models such as yourselves for our mob? Yeah.
Well, you know, I think over the years, you know, there's been varied role models. You know, outside of rugby league, you know, a lot of our leaders that come before us that fought the fight. You know, my dad was one of them back in the day, and up in the South Burnett, and Willie mentioned his old man, you know, his dad. You know, it's one of his role models as well. So, but being a role model, ours directly is linked to sport. So you just try and do the best you can, just try and be a good person, to be honest. That's about it. And if you do the right thing, we're very fortunate. I think, too, that we grew up in close families.
Yeah, true.
You know, my mum and dad were really solid. You know, they're not with us anymore, but, you know, I've got 12 kids in my family. I've got 8 sisters, and, you know, we're still very close. So that's a big thing for us, and will he be the same? You know, it's that family thing.
Mm. Before we move on, you know, what do you hope to overall achieve as your roles as DC ambassadors? I know that, you know, Willie yourself is working closely with community. Is there anything that in particular that you'd...
I enjoy, I feel my passion is to help kids that, you know, around the 15, 16 year age where they could either go left or right, you know, down that track where it leads to destruction or whatever, or at that positive side where they can actually make something of themselves. And a lot of kids out there don't have those role models. And, you know, when I was working in Sydney, I would go and visit a young kid who didn't have a father figure. You know, he didn't, all his brothers were in jail. But he sort of, the relationship that he and I had sort of got a lot closer because he felt that he could trust me, which he could, and I genuinely cared about him. And that's something that I'm, you know, looking forward to, is, you know, working with not only the elderly, but, you know, trying to impact these young kids as well and be a positive influence on them.
Yeah, Dudley. And you yourself, Steve?
Yeah, very much the same, you know, as Willie. And you just got to, I suppose, you know, emulate the people we looked up to.
Yeah.
You know, you'd like to think that there's people who think the same as us. And it's just, as I said, it's about being a good person, you know, not being anyone flash, as they say. But, you know, just doing the right thing. And, you know, it does, it makes you feel good.
Yeah, awesome. And it's great the ambassador role kind of removes that barrier of someone in all the glowing shine and, you know, yeah. it really makes everybody human and realise we're all in this together. We're all, you know, we all have a health journey and we all need to take care of ourselves at the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, that's deadly. So, Willie, just to add in some quick sports chat, tomorrow we have both your old teams going to head with the Cowboys versus Broncos game in Townsville. And, Steve, you're flying up for it. So what are your thoughts on how it'll play out?
I don't watch footy.
He doesn't.
I honestly don't. So I can't comment on that. I'd like
Look,
to see,
fine.
You know,
it makes me feel better.
I've got a soft spot for the Cowboys and I always will.
Yeah.
I hope they win. But yeah, I don't watch it and I'll probably hear the scores on Monday.
Look, it's funny, we had this conversation in the car last week and I'm the same, but because I do some work in that area with NRL.com, I have to watch it. So it's like I have to watch it. But tomorrow I'm up there, obviously, with Deadly Choices. They're obviously both of our partner teams. So we're heading up there. And, look, I'll say I've got a soft spot for Brisbane. I do. But it'll be a very good match, I think. They're very even, even though they're both at the bottom of the table or down near the bottom.
I didn't even know that.
No. So it's part of my other work that I have to keep an eye on.
Am I going to get in trouble for this?
No.
No, you're new to the role. It's fine.
Yeah, it's all good.
I'll start watching it.
No, you know. No, very much the same. I was the same. I don't watch it if I don't have to. I watch Golden Girls or something.
No. You're listening to Deadly Choices Radio on 98.9 FM.
Now, going in another direction, the other week was National Diabetes Week. So that was all about raising awareness of diabetes, the diagnosis and management, et cetera. So, Steve, you're open. You've got to be pretty open being an ambassador, I guess, but you're open about your journey. You know, you're very real with that, with type 1 diabetes. So if you don't mind me asking, how were you first diagnosed?
Yeah, look, I just had the normal symptoms. I was 22, mind you. That at the time was deemed a bit late to get type 1. I was playing footy, so I was fit. Mm. Probably the fittest I've ever been in my whole life, to be honest, when I was 22. And then, so it doesn't discriminate, obviously. And in an off-season, I lost 8 kilos. I was drinking a lot of water, going to the toilet a lot. I thought it was great, you know, I'm in an off-season. I usually put on weight and I was losing weight. I thought, how good is this? You know, but unbeknownst to me, I knew there was something wrong. So I just went to the doctor and got the blood test. And so I was diagnosed in start of 93.
Isn't it interesting that weight loss, unexplained weight loss, you know, is kind of one of those key things that are the first you kind of notice it when chronic conditions do arise. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it's just virtually the body was wasting, my body was waste itself away virtually. So it was just one of those things. But, you know, you're given the option of you look after it. The doctor gave me two options. You look after it, continue on with your footy career, or you don't. You know, the circumstance, what happens after that is not great. You know, and I see a lot of people who are at that other end with it as well. And Willie talked about that story that the uncle down at Work It Out. I mean, what a great story. Mm. But a lot of our people have type 1 diabetes. Mm. They have diabetes, sorry.
Yeah, you're right.
And majority of that's type 2. But really, in the end, they're not really different. If you don't treat them, either one, it's never a good ending.
And when you must have first, you know, found out about this, I mean, was it difficult for you to kind of understand what was going on? Because this is all before IUIH.
I was very lucky. When you're with the professional rugby league team or any team, so here in Brisbane, we had access to the best, you know.
Yeah.
And this is why with what the Institute has formed over the last 10 years – could you imagine, like, I couldn't imagine being diagnosed back home in Mergen.
Yeah.
I reckon it could have been totally different the other way with the care.
Yeah.
So I was lucky enough that I had good professionals around me and around that education, and that's what we now provide for our people here through the Institute. So
yeah, and you make it easy. IUE make it really easy to understand, and they break down that information, and you know, and they do it in a way that you're comfortable with as well. You know, it's not really invasive.
You're just not part of the greater system, and nothing wrong with our public health system, but it can be daunting for a lot of people.
So you know, I guess. Your approach to managing diabetes, how did you actually handle playing professional football with it? Because it would have a whole different regime.
Well, it probably, in a funny way, it suited it.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
I was eating well, I was exercising.
Oh, right. And
that was my job virtually. So as long as I looked after and I educated myself on the diabetes side, it was okay. So, you know, I was testing 6 to 8 times a day, injecting 6 to 8 times a day as well. So I used to inject, obviously, initially. Now I'm on a pump, but that was something, you know. And I think we educated the team because we travel a lot and we spend a lot of time together. We educated them straight away on it.
That's deadly. So it's kind of like you had a good
A good group.
Family environment,
I mean,
in a way,
I spent more time with them, I think, than I did with
your
not. Yeah, you do. Yeah. That's what happens with rugby league. Yeah. So
as we heard earlier from Willie.
So it's something you get used to. So they had to be educated.
Mm.
You know, just in case there was an event.
Mm.
So that was good, and you know, they got to learn about it. And so I was always in a safe area, to be honest. And everywhere we went, we had a doctor. So
yeah, true.
So as I said, it was a totally different. You know, my time with it was different to someone who wasn't in a professional rugby league team,
yeah,
or professional team.
You had your resources, et cetera, readily available, and you know, people there to actually train the whole, I mean, thinking of it as like your family, you know, to train the whole family, you know.
Yeah.
So I understand
All these things us four poor footy players got put through.
But again, it is good that...
Tongue in cheek.
Again, it is good that, you know, IUE do actually now provide, are able to provide this kind of thing for families and create that really good positive change in our health and well-being. So from then to now, keeping on top of your diabetes, what do you do? You know,
Same. Yeah. I'm on a pump now, but it's just around testing regularly. That's always a big thing for me, doing your blood glucose test, finger pricks. And I say that to a lot of our mob who have it in the clinics, and I just say, look, and sometimes you talk to staff as well, it's like, it's really important to, you know, that they test. That's a big thing. And I've got my 5 kids all have type 1 as well, so same thing. Test, you know, that's probably testing your levels to see where you are so you can adjust. Is a very important thing when it comes to diabetes control.
Yeah, and those regular health checks too. So
well, that's another thing. Yeah. The health checks, you know, we got access when you round those health checks, you get to see our endocrinologist as well, so we do have him on board.
Endocrinologist, did you say?
Yeah.
So can you define?
Well, they're doctors who look after diabetes.
Yes.
Anything in the endocrine system. Someone help me here. And an endocrinologist is a specialist in the diabetes area.
Yep.
So the GABA has, I think they have a endo that works out of the GABA. He's been there for a while, Dr. Morton.
Yes.
So there are clinics there run, and we have educators, diabetes educators across the Institute, across our clinics as well.
That's excellent. And you know, you mentioned some key things there for mob with diabetes and what they need to keep on top of. Sorry, type 1 diabetes to specific.
Well, yeah, and type 2. I mean, type 2, right. As I said, the treatment, apart from having insulin compared to, say, tablets,
yeah, that's
the care and the maintenance, when I use those words, around diabetes is no different from type 1 to type 2. You just got to keep on top of it.
Okay. So is there any other key messages we should take away or that, you know, mob need to be aware of to protect themselves against diabetes first and foremost?
Yeah, I think it can't, you know, even though it is can be passed through, you know, generations, it's about prevention. So, you know, it's about keeping active, eating the right food and not being, because, you know, obviously with type 2 is known as a lifestyle condition.
Those are the outside factors.
Yeah, the other factors around that. So, you know, it's just about monitoring that and making sure you do it. And it's virtually, you know, doing what our key messaging is around what we do in Deadly Choices.
How important is, though, that first step to diagnosis? Because, you know,
There's a lot of people, and this is even outside of our people, that are walking around undiagnosed. Mm. It's amazing to look at those numbers. So it's just about going to get your health check to find out. I mean, there'd be. I'd like to see the stats on how many people I think we've done over 80,000 health checks in the last, you know, last year or so. So it'd be amazing to see how many people have their diabetes picked up that they didn't know.
Yeah.
So across the board, that's a big figure.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, well, we might jump into Tracy and Mikey. Welcome back. You're on Deadly Choices Radio and jumping in with Tracy now. So, Tracy, you're the coordinator of training support at IUE. Can you tell us some more about what your role involves?
Yeah. So my role at IUE is just to support the students that are coming through our training. Not a lot of people know that we do training at the Institute, but we do. And so all the students that come in, and when I mean students, I don't mean just school-age students. I mean students from ages groups from 16 all the way up to 60, 65. We are open and welcome all our mob to come in and get an education pretty much.
So can you please break down for us what training IUE offers and who in the community it targets?
Yeah, at the moment we do the Certificate 3 in Business, Certificate 3 in Individual Support, so that's your aged care and disability, and a Certificate 3 in Early Childhood and Education. So all our certificate and qualifications, they all come through as Gillian Queenslanders for Work Initiative.
Yep.
And from time to time, it varies on which qualification we deliver. But at the moment, it's the Cert 3 in Business, Individual Support and Early Childhood Education Care.
Okay. So now this is a Black Phillip training program. So what is actually unique about this training program and how you work with MOB?
Yeah. So the unique thing about this is that, you know, our training is contextualised to the way our MOB learn. You could go and study the Cert 3, you know, Queensland TAFE or anywhere else. But what we do is we contextualise it. We put real life practices. So the students actually get placement within IUE and our member services. So if they're studying the aged care, they get to go out and work with our elders, go with our home support team. Same as business, they get to go and do some job experience at their clinics as a receptionist or administration officer.
Right.
So I guess the unique thing about this is we have that extra support that MOB don't get going through mainstream and through TAFE Queensland or any other RTOs with us. You know, we see the need for MOB to get educated into entry-level roles, and that's what we're all about. You know, it's good to get MOB into clinics to go have their 715, but also to get them educated up and, you know, into employment.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, for the wider community tuning in and listening, and Mike, you might get your input on this too, Sissy. So, you know, because you have actually gone through this program yourself. So I'm just thinking about the unique way or the way that our mob learn. You know, you mentioned before how we learn, it can be quite different. It doesn't mean it's wrong. It doesn't mean no one's dumb. It's just we just learn differently. So, you know, you going through Mikey yourself, can one of you guys comment on what it is to learn something for us and how we go about learning something new? Or it's not just reading something or et cetera. There's that oral aspect as well, and then the connection with someone and being able to work with someone for that kind of understanding, et cetera. Yeah.
So I guess for us, it's not just training classroom based. We don't just sit in the classroom and you got the teacher at the front teaching the class.
Yeah.
We get everyone's experience into it. We have our training mentors come along to support the students, and it's all practical. So it's all hands-on learning. It's 2 to 3 days a week. Mm. And, you know, sometimes it might even be learning outside the classroom.
Mm.
So I might be going at a clinic to learn. We have that cultural safe place for our students to come along rather than, you know, getting the textbook out and learning off the teacher.
Yeah. And that's it's super beneficial, I think, for everybody to learn that way, to be honest, you know, with our education system. So it's great that you guys, you know, have taken note of that and implemented this way of learning.
And we have our Indigenous training mentor who checks in with the students as well to make sure that they're staying engaged, because the last thing we want is students to disengage because there is, you know, a misunderstanding in their learning. So we ask the students what it is, what their goals are, what they want to achieve through the training, and as a training mentor and the training support, we sit down with them one-on-one and just check in with them on a weekly basis.
That's great that you tailor it around the person. The person doesn't have to jump through, you know, all different kinds of hoops, et cetera, to try and work another way that doesn't work for them. So that's really awesome. Again, can you mention the qualifications, you know, you'd receive after going through the traineeship? And on top of that, you know, what other opportunities can follow training?
Yeah, so great opportunities. You know, it's a foot in the door at the end of the day. You know, we want mob into jobs. You know, Southeast Queensland in particular is the fastest growing rate for, you know, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population at the moment.
Yeah, and, it is, yeah.
For us, you know, that means job expansion. You know, we need more mob into employment. And by getting them skilled up and with that qualification, that's breaking that barrier down for them to gain that employment. And, you know, it's a foot in the door for us. They open up, you know, they see what Indigenous health is about, our member services. Then, you know, throughout their qualification, their job experience, they actually get to connect with community, get to connect professional as well. And, you know, it's all about linking in, and they actually find out who their mob is and who they might be related to at clinics.
That's everywhere, isn't it?
Everywhere you go, you're related.
Another new one.
Yeah. So I guess it is a foot in the door, but also when they come towards the end of their qualification, we actually sit down with them and we go and teach them, getting their resume and cover letter up, teaching them, you know, interview practices, skills that they need for then going into employment. So it opens up their opportunity a lot greater. That's also how we try and get these guys into employment or further study. So if they identify that they want to go to university, we'll sit down with them again one-on-one and try and support that as well.
You yourself as a black fellow working in this role, can I ask how it feels for you being that face that, you know, other mobs see and feel okay to, you know, liaise with, etc.? Yeah.
Yep. I love it. I love seeing mob grow at the end of the day, you know, giving them that chance and giving them that opportunity to grow, whether it is going into further study or just learning more about themselves as they go along their own journeys. So that's my big passion, is getting mob educated enough and being those future leaders.
Excellent. So, Mikey, you're here in person as a success story of this very training program. You completed the program yourself and you now work at IUIH.
Yep.
So how was that experience for you?
It was amazing.
Yeah?
I love working for IUE now.
Yeah.
Like Steve was saying before, it's such a positive environment to be around everyone, and yeah, it's good. I love it.
Yeah, Dudley Sissy. So what did your training actually involve? Can you tell us a little bit about what you did there through the traineeship program? Yeah.
So went through for the Ready for Work program.
Okay.
And met Tracy first day. She's been there since day one. It's been deadly. Yeah, pretty much what Tracy was saying. They, like, things that you don't realise matter. So, like, every day we'd go in and, like, introduce ourselves to everyone in the classroom. And I used to always think, I'm like, why do we always do this? Like, like, I'm always saying the same thing. I don't know why we're doing it. And then you realise by the end of it, when you do your interview, you're actually a lot more confident when you talk about yourself because you were doing it the whole way through.
Right.
So it was just like helping that confidence grow within yourself.
And that transition into a whole new way of, I guess, representing yourself,
yeah,
et cetera, and working, you know, in communities too, in the same instance. So, you know, how did you first find out about the training program? What was that first step?
I actually got an email from one of my sister girls. Shout out to Tiara.
Hey, Tiara, if you're listening.
she sent me an email saying, oh, hey, sis, you know, are you interested in doing any of these qualifications? And I was like, yeah, you know, just might as well. Like, you never know until you try. So just called up, sent an email, and, yeah, it was pretty straightforward.
Were you a bit nervous trying to organise that, or
extremely,
how did you feel? Yeah,
I was very nervous.
Yeah, yeah.
Being a stay-at-home mum for, you know, the past 4 years.
Right.
So it was just, like, literally getting ready to, like, you know, get out there and start putting myself out there. I had no idea what to say, but they were so helpful, and Tracy was really good giving me a call, and, yeah, it was good.
Yeah, that's awesome, and it's great to see, again, another new pathway in getting out of, because you know, from what I hear about other mums that are stay-at-home mums, and they're constantly there with the kids, and that's their life. It's just the kids, make sure the house is okay, so that everybody else is okay, and then getting things done and da-da-da-da-da. But then balancing another new thing on top of that and getting out of that comfort zone and what you're used to, it must be, you know, that's really commendable, you know, good on you for taking that step. Oh. What was that motivation for you to actually go and follow up with that email, etc.?
Yeah. Oh, it was just reached a point in life where I'm just like, I want to do something.
Mm.
I don't know what it is, but I want to try something new.
It's time.
Yeah, it's time. Time for me to venture out. So, yeah, no, it was deadly. Once I got there, it was good.
Was it what you expected at all?
I had no expectations.
Yeah.
I never go in anywhere with expectations. So it was good in the end. So I was happy.
So, you know, balancing this, you know, new, I guess, routine regime and having, you know, being an adult learner and then also balancing that with kids. How was that for you? How did you manage those two worlds combining and balancing those two things? Yeah.
Communication.
Right.
Yeah, was key. So as soon as something popped up, the training team at IUE, you just have a yarn to them, just let them know what's happening. They're so flexible. Like if I had something, like I had to pick up my son from school early, they were like, yep, just let us know. You're sweet to just go whenever you need to. They were really good like that and supportive.
Isn't it great that, you know, Black organisations, et cetera, like this, you know, understand that importance as well? Like
definitely.
If you're going to be involved in something that, you know, is going to benefit you, you've got to do the other stuff that benefits you so you can do everything else as well.
It.
That sounds like, I hope that makes sense.
No, yeah, I get it.
Well, as long as you do, that's fine. What do you think that you gained overall from the training? You know, I'm hearing all these great things, but, you know, if we could get that overall, what you gained.
Well, employment. That was a plus. But definitely a sense of direction and hope that, you know, I'm actually going to be doing something. Like, I'm not saying that I'm sitting at home doing nothing, you know, I had a kid, but, yeah, it was just a sense of hope that, I can make something of myself and a change into the world.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you went on to earn a position as a receptionist for IUIH. So how has that been for you?
It's been pretty easy, actually, considering that I was introverted, but, I found myself within the Ready for Work program and talking out and getting used to it. So it helped a lot because I knew a few people within the institute.
Yeah, good.
So
yeah.
It made me feel a lot more comfortable. So it was good, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. And, you know, what do you think is the value of these training programs as well? Would you recommend it to other people?
I recommend it to everyone.
Yeah.
I literally tell everyone about it. Just a sense of direction. I feel if someone's just lost, man, just give a call. It's so easy. It's so supportive. Yeah.
That's awesome. And look, Tracy, are most students as successful as Mikey was, you know? I guess you could rate success differently, but, you know, what generally do most students go on to do after the training? Yeah.
Yeah, I guess most students, you know, that's when they find their journey throughout their training. You know, a lot of our past students in the last 6 months have either been gained employment or went on to further studies into university, which is a big success for us, you know, not only for IUE itself, but the community that we live in. So, you know, a lot of our students are successful, but again, you know, a lot of them move back home to where their country's from as well. And, you know, we just finished our Cert 3 in primary healthcare, and we have a lot of Aboriginal health workers now going back to their own community and working with their mob as well.
Yeah, and especially in those remote communities where it's really, really needed, for sure. I'm just thinking about, you know, on the other hand, sometimes not everybody can have the outcome that they want. With your role and who you've worked with over time and the stories that you've seen in terms of growth, etc., do you have advice for those who might be struggling, you know, to complete a traineeship or who might find that they're in a different circumstance after completing training and might feel like their hope's diminished a little because of that or etc., you know, because I know that it's not the end of the world and your journey doesn't stop there, but, you know, others might not know that, so...
I'd highly recommend students just to check in, you know, check in with, you know, their mentor in life, you know, or whoever they look up to, and figure out their purpose and why they're here today. Not everyone knows, but, you know, check in with someone who knows you well. You know, it could be simple as doing a ready for work program or, you know, going into an entry level certificate. But at the end of the day, you know, you do what you want to do and what your purpose in life is.
And again, there's no shame in reaching out.
No, definitely. No shame in reaching out. You know, that's what we're here for, in particular myself, you know, sitting down with students and checking in with them.
And how has, you know, it's such a fantastic, you know, program and it's great that you guys let people know that, you know, sometimes a step back leads you to two step forwards. It's okay just as long as you let us know what's going on. So from that kind of support you give MOB, et cetera, and looking at this program over time, how do you think the training program has developed since it first started?
Oh, it's developed range, like, so much. You know, we had 20 students, now we're up to 50 students coming in, you know, with more than that as well. Not only just students, but also school-based trainees coming out of that Murray School. So, you know, it's just getting bigger and bigger. And like I said, you know, the population's growing down here. So, you know, we have to increase our numbers as well. So giving MOB that opportunity is just so great. And I guess the good thing about it is, you know, we don't close the door on MOB. Obviously, there's eligibility requirements, but we want MOB to give us a call and yarn. You know, we can talk that out and see if they are eligible for this training. But also, if MOB do disengage or have to go back to country, we won't close their enrolment. We'll still keep it open. So I think that's the great thing that we do at the Institute as well, is continue to support MOB if they do have to leave for sorry business or disengagement.
Mm. And people are, we're complex people, so it's great that you guys understand that and the different roles and responsibilities, et cetera, that we have and obligations. So where can our listeners find out more and even sign up?
Yep, so they can give our head office a call, 3648 9500.
Yep.
Or just contact our training team at IUE. So, you know, shoot us an email, training@iuih.org.au. You know, feel free to ask for myself. I promise I'll try and answer your phone calls. But, yeah, just give us a call. You know, one of the training team will have a yarn with you. It's all about yarning at the end of the day, you know. And we do have a few up-and-coming enrolments for our Certificate 3 in Business and individual support. So if you'd like to enrol into one of those courses or learn a bit more information about them, please give us a call and, you know, we'll set up a time for you to come in and have a yarn with us.
Excellent. And, again, you mentioned before, sorry, the eligibility.
Yep.
Wow. Eligibility requirements.
Yep.
I got it. Yes.
So there is a few eligibility requirements. One of them being, if you do have a Cert 3, Certificate 3 or higher, please give us a call. Unfortunately, you know, there is some times that some students may not be eligible. But however, if we have a yarn and we know a bit more about your circumstances, you might be unemployed for longer than 12 months, you know, we can put a case into that to say, well, actually, you'll benefit from our Certificate 3. So there's always ways, you know, that we can yarn that through. So don't be ashamed, but always just give us a call if, you know, you're not 100% sure or you do hold a certificate before. But at the end of the day, you know, we want MOB into our training and into employment.
Yep. Excellent. Well, thanks, Sissy, for that. And thanks, Mikey, for sharing your story. That's absolutely wonderful. It's great to see such great things happening and getting more deadly people working in community. I feel really good.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
You're listening to Deadly Choices Radio on 98.9 FM.
So just the other week was the Deadly Choices and South Sydney Rabbitohs launch at ANZ Stadium. Ambassador Bo De La Cruz had the chance to yarn with the likes of Cody Walker, James Roberts and Kyle Turner about the exciting new partnership. Take a listen.
I have the best 5/8 in the game, our deadly brother Cody Walker. How you going?
Good, yourself?
I'm good, thank you. So tell me who you mob and where you're from.
Yeah, I'm a proud Bunjalung man and from my father's family and proud Yuin man from the South Coast with my mother's family.
And do you get back to community much?
Yeah, I try to get back there a fair bit. Went there a couple of weeks ago with Braden to a debutante's ball and back home in Lismore. And it was great to see the kids up there and just hearing their mindsets around what they want to do in life. And it was quite amazing, the jobs that they wanted to go into. So it was great to see some young kids have big dreams and some goals in life that they want to achieve. And they're pretty amazing jobs that they were saying.
And talking about those dreams, what are some of the deadly choices that you get out to the community about, you know, living a healthy lifestyle?
Yeah, I suppose that I can relate to a lot of the kids back in the community. I didn't really debut until 26. So as a young kid, I probably didn't have the right diet and all those sort of things, what it took to be an NRL footballer. So I didn't make a habit of eating healthy. So if I can just pass on those little messages about eating healthy and doing the right things and making the right choices and following your dreams, it's something I'm pretty passionate about, and it's something I always enjoy doing is inspiring young kids to follow their dreams, and no dream's too big.
Awesome. And as a kid, what were your deadly choices?
Drinking a lot of water and trying to be active every day, and you know, you put yourself in a great mindset if you're active every day and you feel good about yourself after a whole day of training.
And so what would your deadly choice be to, you know, if you were to tell the kids?
I suppose it's, you know, making those choices as a young kid. They're not huge choices. They're just little choices. And if you make them early, they become a habit. So, you know, early choices and making the right one.
And so, Cody, with the partnership between the Bunnies and Deadly Choices, what do you think it means to the club and the community?
I think it's awesome. I think it's great that our club, you know, South Cares, does a lot of work out in the community and motivating young kids to finish school and on to work and all those sort of things. And I think this is a great partnership that we're doing. It's just about educating our young people to make deadly choices and the healthy choices and all those sort of things. And, you know, we inspire young kids to be better and follow their dreams. It's you know, we can only move forward as people.
I'm Bo Dela Cruz. This is Jimmy the Jet. How you going, brother?
Yeah, not too bad. You know, enjoying the move back down to Sydney and, yeah, really enjoying playing footy and getting back into it.
Awesome. So tell us who your mob are and where you're from.
I was born in Kempsey, so I'm Dungaddy mob, and also Bundjalung and Warramai. So that's where my old man's from in Foster. So I've got three different areas there, so...
Awesome. So being back down here at the Bunnies, you know, this is the place you grew up in your community. What's it like for you to be back here?
Yeah, obviously, it's a special spot for me. Growing up, playing juniors in La Perouse Panthers. So it's really good to be back and playing back there and giving back to the community.
Awesome. So growing up, you know, what were your deadly choices, you know, to be able to get to this level of footy?
Yeah, obviously, you know, you got to train plenty of days and a lot of hard work and dedication. You got to eat healthy and, stay in school and make sure you get all your grades up and, you know, do all those kind of things. And I'm sure you do well in life.
Deadly. And so what would you tell the boys and girls out in the community? What should be their deadly choices?
Yeah, just stay in school, eat healthy and do your best at whatever you try and do.
A deadly choice is a healthy choice. I have the deadly Kyle Turner, one of our awesome back rowers from the South Sydney Rabbitohs. How are you going, brother?
Yeah, good, thanks, Bo.
That's good. So just tell us a bit about yourself and who your mob are and where you grew up.
Yeah, so I grew up in Coonabarabra. It's northwest, about 6 hours. It's near Dubbo. That's where everyone affiliates with. My mob's the Gamilaroi tribe. You know, it covers a lot of the area around there, and I'm a proud Gamilaroi boy.
Awesome. So as an elite athlete in your journey to the Bunnies, what were some of the deadly choices that you made growing up?
Yeah, growing up, I made the personal choice of not touching alcohol until I was 18 and like really established myself in Sydney. You know, it was really tough. I had a lot of mates that always had parties every weekend, but I made that sacrifice because I knew what I wanted to be when I grew up, and, you know, it's got me here today.
That's awesome. And I suppose going out into the community, what would be some of the important messages you would give out young girls and boys?
Yeah, it's just making those smart choices more than anything. You know, it takes a lot of sacrifice. Everyone wants to be successful, but, yeah, it does take that sacrifice to get there. And, you know, anyone can achieve what they want to achieve. You know, I had to be really strict on my diet, couldn't touch alcohol, no drugs, anything like that. So anyone can do it. It's just sticking to it and being diligent.
Awesome. And what is your deadly choice?
Mate, drinking 2 liters of water a day, I try to pride myself on drinking a lot of water and, you know, being healthy and fit, getting my body right. That's pretty much it.
Thank you, everyone. That's Kyle Turner, Bo Dela Cruz. A deadly choice is a healthy choice.
Thanks, Sissy. Bo Dela Cruz, ambassador there for Deadly Choices. Yarn on with a couple of the players from the Bunnies and talking about the new exciting partnership. Now let's get into upcoming DC events. Willie, what's the first one you can tell us about?
Okay, this year's DC Touch Tournament date has been set. It will officially be on November 23rd at White Hills Reserve in Camp Hill. So keep an eye out for registration opening any day now.
And Steve?
Yeah, oh look, the local DC Fit still on every Tuesday and Thursday at 4 p.m. It's at Centenary Lakes Park, Caboolture. Take advantage of it, you know, free outdoor fitness program while you can. Open to all fitness levels and abilities.
And look, the annual Queensland Murray Carnival will be held in October from the 1st to the 5th at the South Pine Sporting Complex in Brendale. So even if you're not playing in the carnival, you can still come along to support some deadly games of footy.
Plus, check out the DC website for info on our upcoming leadership camps happening from the 23rd to the 27th of September.
To participate in any of our events, you got to be up to date with your 715 health checks. So you know, call your nearest clinic to get a health check.
Excellent. And lastly, book in for your biannual eye check today at any participating AMS and take home a pair of Deadly Choices sunnies. All right, guys, how we like to end all our shows with asking, what's your deadly choice? Steve?
This week, been doing a lot more walking, got back into the gym, so I'm very sore. So I did some squats.
And you were coaching at that all-boys game, so you know.
I didn't have coaching, but yeah. I was there.
Oh, you were there. Sorry, yeah, you were there. Actually, we do hear a couple of your interviews that you did on that game too with a couple of the players, which was awesome. But I was going to say you wouldn't feel too sore from that, so it's good. It's good to see that you got your fitness in otherwise.
Yeah, exactly.
So, deadly. Willie, yourself, what's your deadly choice?
My deadly choice, you know, like Steve, I enjoy staying active. So I'll wake up, 5:30 every morning. I'll train in the morning, and then after work, when all my commitments are done, I'll train in the afternoon as well. Just love being active.
Yeah, excellent. Must make you feel good, hey?
It does.
Yeah, deadly. Mikey.
Hey.
Hey, girl. Yeah, hey, what's your deadly choice?
Definitely drinking a lot of water. Yeah, that's my deadly choice.
Excellent. Yeah. And yourself, Tracy?
Yeah, again, being active, trying to at least, you know, go for a jog every day. Keep being active at the end of the day.
Excellent. That's awesome. Well, thank you, everybody, for jumping in today. It's been a great yarn. I've learnt a lot. And thank you for being, you know, open and honest. It's really good that, you know, you guys are able to share your stories and have Mob tuning in to, you know, relate and know that everybody can make an effort towards making deadly choices and, you know, better quality of life. And everybody's working hard at doing good things. So that's great. Thanks again for jumping in and hope to catch you sometime soon.
Thank you.
Deadly Choices Radio. A show encouraging Mob to make healthy choices, from stop smoking, eating good food, exercising daily, and getting a health check for themselves and their family. Featuring Deadly Choices ambassadors, the Healthy Lifestyle Mob, and many more. So tune in to Deadly Choices after 6 p.m. each Wednesday and on demand at 989fm.com.au.